Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University and is a licensed chiropractor with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I am Dr. Vincent Medici. This is one of the most favorite things I do each week. 1 hour where I get to, in a sense, pray and meditate with you, my wonderful audience who needs education. The more I do this, and it's been a year, the more I am totally committed to the understanding that the flaw, the mistake we're making, is we're not treating the public or giving them their due educationally. We ought to have schools. Schools in every neighborhood where people gather and get the inside track on medicine and how to stay healthy. And this is what I'm trying to do, and we'll talk about that later. But today's show, if you're under the age of 18 and if you're sensitive to graphic description, I don't think you should do this show. We're going to talk about men today, a topic I wanted to wait to get to, and that's the male prostate gland. This is the gland of ignorance, and yet it is the number two cancer for men, at least as late as 2011. We get 250,000 diagnoses a year. It is second only to lung cancer for men. And I think after I lay out the paradigm today, you're going to see all the things you can do to keep that prostate healthy. And that's the key. Change the environment. So if you're sensitive to graphic description, don't listen to the show today. If you're under the age of 18, don't listen to the show today. You're not going to read this in books. You're not going to hear this in common day lectures, because it's an integration of medicine. It's an utilization of medical facts. It's something I've put together for you that I think is going to tempt your common sense. And that's what I depend on in you, my audience, your common sense. I assure you, if you study the evolution of science, the evolution of medicine, the evolution of democracy, you're going to see it's common sense ultimately that rules. Dogma, paradigms, etc., they die off. Usually after the progenitors of a new idea die off. But the point is, in the end, it's common sense and the public will that will determine the courses that we take. So let's talk about the prostate gland. First of all, where is it? Have you ever touched yours? Do you know what it does? If the answer to those three questions is no, not really, we lose already. How do you take advice about something up to the point of prostatectomy, meaning having it cut off or killed, radiation pellets, given doses of Lupron, Flomax? How can it possibly keep you up at night when it's hypertrophied, that's BPH, benign prostatic hypertrophy, when you don't know where it is, you don't know what it does, and you don't know how to take care of it? So, first of all, what is it? It's a muscular walnut. And if you did, and we'll talk about this later, go in about 3 inches into the male rectum and press downward. Now, this is second nature for me and others, but for most people, you have no idea where this gland even is. If you went 3 inches into the anus and downward towards the perineum, you're going to feel a walnut, a little lump in there. That little lump should be about the size of a walnut. That little lump has a vital role in what makes the sperm white. What makes your sperm, gentlemen, white and sticky is a fluid that the prostate gland produces. So this big walnut of a gland with your urethra, that which the urine comes through, this little tiny hose running right through the center of this walnut-shaped gland, has openings into the passageway. So we say that from your urinary bladder, where you hold your urine, comes a tube, and that tube goes through the center of this walnut. And into, this is fascinating, into the very same tube that your urine flows, into the very same tube, passageway, urethra, the prostatic urethra, from the center of this tube, out through a tube, down the shaft of the penis, and out into the toilet, comes your urine. From the bladder, into the urethra, through the prostatic urethra, through the belly of that prostate, and right out the shaft of the penis, into the toilet, goes your urine. But when you ejaculate, when you release sperm, obviously you don't urinate and release sperm simultaneously. My God, I'd hope not. The body designed a system so that even though it uses the same tube through the center of that walnut-shaped prostate, located about 3 inches, 4 inches into the rectum and pressing down towards the perineum, crotch, pardon the crudeness of that word, but some people understand that better. You go in about 3 inches, point down. It feels like a walnut. In the center of that walnut is an extension of the bladder through what we call the prostatic urethra and then out the shaft of the penis. So you got the anatomy down. Now, when you ejaculate, valves shut off the flow of urine. So when you ejaculate, when the sperm comes out, you cannot urinate simultaneously because there are valves up in the bladder that shut off. And those valves don't let you urinate, so you can ejaculate. Now, in the center of that tube going down through the center of the prostate are these little holes. They're called the prostatic utricles. And those little holes squirt this white fluid. And that white fluid, we understand, is sperm. The contribution that the prostate gland makes to this sperm is the whiteness of it and the stickiness of it. And then there are other parts of your genital anatomy, your seminal vesicle, that produces a lot of fructose and vitamin C to nourish the sperm. And per ejaculation, you may have 200 to hopefully 400 million sperm per ejaculation. And we're not going to go in that direction today. But what the prostate is doing, why we have the gland, is that it makes the sperm healthy. It's also part of a neurology, of a neuroanatomy that helps you maintain and enjoy an erection. And this is the problem with the prostatectomies. We tamper with those nerves. Sometimes we inadvertently, or we just don't have a choice, we end up cutting those nerves, and that's the issue with sexual function after this gland comes out. But once that gland is big, meaning it's not cancerous, it's just hypertrophied, and that happens to tons of men. Once it's very large, it interferes with sexual function. Once that gland is infected, prostatic prostatitis, a chronic prostatitis. Once that gland's infected, it interferes with sexual function. So from prostate cancer when it gets cut out or it's radiated, to benign prostatic hypertrophy when that gland enlarges, and we'll get into the consequences of that, and whether it's just prostatitis, a chronic low-grade infection. You do the antibiotic, it gets better, but then it comes back, but now the antibiotic doesn't work, so you kind of live with it. You're kind of infected, but you're not infected, but oops, what happened to sexual function? Okay, so you've got this little holes in the center of that prostatic urethra, and it produces this white sticky fluid. That's what the prostate does. Now you got it. Now you know what the prostate does. Next issue. What happens to that prostate? What is that prostate subject to? How do you degenerate that environment leading to a cancer, a hypertrophy, a prostatitis, poor sexual function? I want to harp on something today. It's called the reason that we're often given for why we've got what we've got. We call it genetic. You go to a doctor, you've got a cancer. You ask the doctor, how could this be? I thought I had a healthy lifestyle. Why me? And the doctor says, well, it's in the genes. And this is the proverbial answer. In the end, as you trace the reasons to the reasons to the reasons to the reasons, you come to the wall. And that wall is, look, buddy, this is genetic. It's in your family. This is what happens. Finally, the genes break down and you get what you get. I'm going to harp on this today because it's only part of the perception. It's a myopic part. It's a part that leaves you powerless. It's what you're told that effectively means there's nothing you can do but grin and bear it. And we do not accept that, do we? Well, you know, for many years we had to lean upon our good conscience, our common sense, our sense of autonomy, our sense of self-worth when we turned and said, you know, I'm not going to accept that. There must be something controlling this. It's not simply genetic. Well, the truth now is, up at about 10 years ago, we developed a whole new field in science to prove to us that we were right originally. It's called epigenetics. It's a concept that says that your genes express in reference to all these satellite genes that have to be switched on or off. And if those satellite genes say go, then the main gene goes. That's a simplified version, but the point is, genetic isn't so fixed. Genetics is not black and white. Genetics is infinitely malleable. In fact, DNA, okay, is a torsion spring. DNA, and we're going to prove this beyond repute over this next century, DNA is basically just a wave of light. Right, it's a particle and a wave. DNA is probably the most pure, essential expression of photonic energy in the body. DNA, we would say, is torsional. Check out Dr. Len Horowitz. He's a dentist with other degrees in public health. He's been saying this for 20 years. It's Dr. Leonard Horowitz. DNA is torsional. It effectively means you do not accept the diagnosis or the prognosis or the counsel that, look, buddy, it's in your genes. Now, do genes have an influence? Of course they do. It would be absurd to say otherwise. It would be wrong. It's too much the other direction, right? Why is it so hard for people to see it down the middle? You know, we have Democrats and we have Republicans. We can't have a third party, not a potent third party, because you're either one or the other. Life doesn't work that way. Everybody knows that. But if you look at how we function, we're always split. Where's the common sense? At coffee tables, we agree. It's the hybridized view. And this applies. Genetic means you have a tendency, a slant. So if you get BPH and your friend down the street didn't, you might have a tendency, or prostate cancer, a tendency. But the field of epigenetics now, that's a new field, and this is not to be disputed. Now, I'm going to translate epigenetics into a model that you can understand. And then I'm going to translate that model into the prostate gland. And you're going to see how medicine should really function. Yes, you are. So, when we talk about the prostate gland, what we have to talk about, it's not your genetic tendency. We have to talk about your terrain, your environment. What environment does that prostate gland sit in, live in, bathe in, expunge itself in, cathart in, move in, or not move in? What environment? If we all shrunk ourselves down, remember that film in the 60s with Raquel Welch? Where everybody got shrunk down to like microns and they were in the blood vessels being chased by white blood cells and all sorts of things that attack them in the human body. film was way ahead of its time. We ought to do another one like that. Something to really give you three-dimensionally what goes on. This is why people fail. This is why if I talk like this on this show, you'll get it, but maybe you won't get it. The line between the two is the graphics. Can you really get in there with me? That prostate gland, 3 inches into the rectum, pressing down, walnut-shaped, should be soft and smooth, pliable. That prostate gland lives in what kind of environment? Well, first of all, it's right next to the rectum. And yes, the two do communicate. But you have to look at this gland and its environment as subject to its structure, its chemistry, its psyche. Yes, the gland has a psyche to it. There is a psychology with the gland. And then lastly, you have to look at the gland with respect to the extraneous scars, physical scars from physical traumas. Now, I've said this before on other shows, but we're going to apply it today with a functional model of how you should understand the health of the prostate. It's a great, great, great part of your body to talk about in this way. So you, if I look at your prostate gland, I'm looking at your structure to be defined and explored. Your chemistry to be defined and explored. Your psyche to be defined and explored. And whatever scars you've gotten from whatever surgeries or physical traumas you've had over the years. I'm looking at you that way. You're going to call that the rule of four. The four variables that you apply to any condition you have in your body to get a functional understanding of what it means. Otherwise, you can read the pathology report. And that isn't going to tell you a thing. It's just an elaborate way of describing something. Thanks. I know what I got in 15,000 pages, but I don't know what to do about it, nor is anything that you're telling me functional outside of surgery and Lupron or radiation pellets. What medicine should be providing to you is a model into which you can start to take action. They tell me I have to do this, guys. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. Hopefully you're streaming this show on straighttalk.cc. That's with two T's, .cc, not .com. And welcome to you. Get to the website and hear the other 47 shows so you can understand more of what I'm talking about today. All right, back to the show. When we talk about your prostate, and your problems, you think the rule of four. Now let's talk about structure. What do I mean by structure? I tell you, I mean a lot more with that word than I meant 20 years ago when I got out of chiropractic school. It means a lot more than it did back in 1991 when I did my first stretch class. When I started earlier in the early 90s to understand the wonderful relationship between structure and function. Structure and function. The way your bones stack up affects this gland. Because if your structure's not right, you lose, new word, the sacral pump. The sacral pump. That's your backbone, that triangle down there that you just about sit on. It's called the sacrum. And above that sacrum is the fifth lumbar vertebra. Touch your own. Just take your hands and put it on your back right now, down low, just before the crack of the buttocks, and you're touching the sacrum. Guess what? That sacrum pumps. It moves. Come on, you know it moves. Have you ever watched a break dancer or a belly dancer? That sacrum goes back and forth. That's called the sacral pump. Every time the sacrum pumps, the prostate dances with it. Every time the sacrum pumps, the prostate dances with it. If your sacrum pumps, does your sacrum pump? Or are you fused up? Like grandma and grandpa. Grandpa's fused up. If you watch grandpa walk across the room, often grandpa looks like he's going to fall over, like the wind's going to blow him over, like he's going to tip. We start to say when we see that, oh, look at that nice little old man. That's grandpa. Of course, all the grandpas listening in the audience, they're screaming now. They don't want to look like that. They don't want to be like that. Well, if you are a little grandpa and you have a prostate problem, I guarantee you, you're tipping over when you walk. And that's not your fault. You didn't know. The point is, we want you to be like the break dancer. We want you to be like the belly dancer. We want the fifth lumbar vertebra. So now I'll get technical. We want the fifth lumbar vertebra and the first sacral segment to pump, to dance back and forth, back and forth. Guess what's just in front of that sacrum? The prostate gland. So when you dance with the sacrum, you dance with the prostate. The pelvis has to be mobilized. The pelvis, what you call your hip bones, need to be mobilized. They need to dance as any boxer or martial artist or dancer would understand. They need to dance. Guys, this is happening all the time. This is the reality of our day to day. Yes, it is. You don't see it, but it is. If somebody trains an athlete down at the high school track or the college track or the professional track, if someone trains an athlete, when that athlete hits 30 or 35 or 40, that trainer will look at another trainer and says, "Hey, gee, I think Joe is losing his legs." When you have a horse and that horse gets to a certain age, you say, "That horse has started to lose its legs." In human terms, when we watch an athlete get to that point where the athlete starts to lose his legs, it means the pelvis, the sacral pump, is dying. And if you want to see people lose their legs, just look at football players and athletes when they're 60, not when they're 30. We take the best and the brightest. We beat them up. That's football. That's sports in general. And by the time they're 60, 65, they're stuck in the pelvis. They've really lost their legs. And this is going on every day. For secretaries, for men, for women, for everybody. As it relates to men, as it relates to the prostate gland, once you start to fuse there, you lose your legs. And there are muscles controlling whether or not you fuse there. And those muscles are the thighs and the psoas. Check one of my shows for psoas. And the hamstrings. That is a very special discussion today. The hamstrings and the adductors. So the muscles behind the legs, the muscles in between the legs, the muscles in the front of the legs, and then this huge muscle in your gut called the psoas. When those muscles get tight, you lose the sacral pump. You can see that when people walk. And when they really lost it, when it's really gone, guess what? Your prostate gland does not drain. It doesn't dance, so it immobilizes. When this gland immobilizes, you can't get the good nutrition to it. And worse yet, you can't drain those chemicals from it. Your drainage from the gland goes away. And it's not in the best place. Do you really think it's a coincidence that this gland gets cancered so often and it's just an inch or two away from the rectum? You don't think what's in the rectum kind of diffuses into the lymph and can work its way into the prostate gland? You really think they're that separated, do you? You think it's a pure coincidence that lung cancer is the number one cancer. And of course, the lung and the air have direct contact. You don't think there's a relationship, huh? Well, medicine doesn't seem to. So somebody drank the Kool-Aid. Somebody's not thinking, but you're thinking. So get this straight. The fact that the lungs are in direct contact with the air makes the lungs more vulnerable. Number one male cancer. Now, how does the prostate fit in? It's right next to the rectum. And that rectum is what you're taking out of your body. It's what you don't want in your body. And yet, as we know from constipation and a whole other set of problems we'll talk about, hopefully if we have the time, what sits there in the sigmoid rectal area will diffuse sooner or later at some degree into the prostate. Oh, so now you're saying that the rectum causes cancer. It's just the way we're made. Let me tell you about the way we're made. We're made perfectly, except we've got these tiny little glitches that God asked us to work out. You see? And that's the way you should look at it. We are perfect, but we have to do our share. Otherwise, we'd have nothing to do. Opening up the sacral pump so that the prostate can drain its fluids under the influence of a rectum and a few other things is infinitely more interesting than paying taxes. Yes, it is. So understand this. That gland sits there and it's made to dance. If it can't, you cannot drain the poison out of it. You can't drain the poison. What poison? Well, if you're a construction worker, you know what poison. If you work in an auto body shop, you know what poison. If you're a hairstylist, you know what poisons. The poisons are everywhere. They're called the xenoestrogens. So we're moving a little bit off structure, but I'm going to come back to it later. And we're going into the chemistry. What makes the problem? Why do so many construction guys have this problem? If you take all the people in the world that have prostate problems, big hypertrophied prostate glands, you're going to see an interestingly high correlation between the growth of that gland, benign prostatic hypertrophy, which keeps you up urinating all night. And if it robs you of your sleep, see my sleep show. But you already know the devastating consequence of not sleeping. The point being, what about these chemicals? Construction workers know there are these estrogens, estrogen mimetic, big word for chemicals that look just like estrogen. And they grow the prostate. They cause or force the conversion of testosterone to dihydrotestosterone, testosterone to DHT. This estrogen mimetic, false hormone, toxins in the air, and other sorts of chemicals issue hypertrophies the prostate. On top of which, you know, the prostate is a wonderful place for chemicals to hang out. You know why? Because you can't get them out of there once they're in because there's no sacral pump. So people who are exposed to more toxic chemical will take the chemical in faster than, with loss of the sacral pump, they'll remove the chemical. That's your average Joe. Your average Joe, by the time he's 50 or 55 or 60, really is not exercising and really is not flexible in the way I'm talking about to keep the sacral pump and really isn't watching the diet, or it's an occupational issue. So biochemically and structurally, the gland is under great duress. Now, this is medicine. This is exciting. Because we have this sacral pump. By the way, did you know what lives in the sacrum more than any other part of your body? In fact, do you know why we call it the sacrum? If you trace this word sacrum back long enough, sacrum meant sacred. Why was this bone sacred? Oh, just a bunch of ignorant cavemen that looked at it and thought it was cool. Yeah, really. Those same cavemen were putting up structures that we can't figure out today. We weren't so ignorant and dumb in the Old Testament, were we? The Old Testament is filled with wisdom. And I assure you, they looked upon the human body as a divine creation. And there was something about this bone that was special. And you know what? I mean, I can't believe this correlation. Today we find that the sacrum is the largest source of stem cells in the body. The sacrum makes the stem cells as much as anywhere and more. Now, do you think possibly that if this bone moves and dances the way it does in a dancer or in an athlete, or in someone that's flexible, or in a break dancer today, right? Your kids are out there breakdancing. You see them make all these moves with their lower pelvis. Chances are they won't do that when they're 70 years old. We hope they will. Because possibly, as that bone articulates with the fifth lumbar vertebra and dances its dance, it generates more of these stem cells. Maybe that's why they called it sacrum. Maybe that's why certain people wore it around their neck. Maybe there's something divine in our anatomy. Maybe the Greeks and the Egyptians and people who were fascinated by human anatomy were fascinated because they understood functionally what these things were. Maybe in certain times when we forbid dissection, of cadavers. This happened in China for many centuries. You couldn't dissect a body. Maybe when Michelangelo had to, as we know historically, steal the cadavers to break them down and study them. Maybe controlled groups have put and stood in the way of scientific discovery and celebration of this magnificent system that God gave us. So you have to open up your sacral pump if you're going to respect your prostate gland. That's what it's about. And so you're supposed to, at 60 years old, have the biomechanic race, the athletic stride that you did when you were 20. And if you don't, and you're running around almost tipping over to the point where you need a cane, do you think there could be some vague link to the fact that the prostate doesn't function? How are you going to argue with this? Doesn't this touch a chord within you? Doesn't this appeal to your common sense? If you don't move it, you'll lose it? No, it's not scientific enough. Science needs to stretch its mind a little bit. It needs to open up. Or what else is the problem we're having? Why do we have so much cancer? Why do we have so much benign prostatic hypertrophy? Why do we have so many and so much uncontrolled antibiotic use with prostatitis? Now, I'm going to add another factor here. The psyche. The brain. Check the AMA and the curriculums that your psychiatrists are privy to. Check Freudian psychotherapy. I didn't make up all the things I'm talking about today. This information is smattered throughout many fields, in formal science and in holistic science. It's all over the place. You just have to put it together. That's what I do for you. My service to you is I integrate it. You can read about little parts of it, but you can't put it together like I can. In psychiatry, we study Freud's psychoanalytic theory, four stages: the oral stage, the anal stage, the Oedipal stage, the post-Oedipal stage. And along the way, kids find out about the anus. And, as you know, moms, dads, that anus is often understood as a source of pleasure. Stated blatantly, it feels good to take a dump. It feels good to defecate. Where did we develop that? Or are you horrified in the process? Or every time when you go to the bathroom, do you start to have a panic attack? Do you sit there on the toilet bowl for hours and it just doesn't come out? Are you anal retentive? Anal retentive. The anal retentive personality. You all know The Odd Couple, one of the most famous TV shows in the history of TV, The Odd Couple. Tony Randall, his character is anal retentive. His character walks into a room and sees dirty old Felix's food on the floor, and he flips out and he starts cleaning the house. You know people like this. They just have to clean. They walk in, something's off, something's crooked. They're talking to you and looking at something. They're talking to you, they're looking to something. What are they looking at? They're looking at a picture behind your head. That picture's crooked. It's bothering them. They have to stop in the middle of the conversation and correct where the picture is. Nothing's ever quite right or perfect enough. It's got to be perfect, beyond perfect, beyond perfect, beyond perfect. You're laughing now. I know you are, because that's you. I know it's you. There's lots of anal retents in the population. You see, when you're really little, some bad deal gets made. Some bad deal gets made. If you're not a good little boy or girl, I don't know. You want to know how blatant this gets? You don't get wiped by mommy. You can sit there on the toilet bowl in a pile of your poop because you were a bad little girl. Or you conclude you're a bad little boy because mommy's not there, so she doesn't really care. Or somebody else has taken over because mommy's gone. And that means your anus is dirty. Yeah, that's Freudian theory. It works that way. And there's a million variations on that theme. It works that way. The point is, and I won't go on for 5 hours with psychoanalytic theory, but here's the bottom line. This grows a personality that holds the anus in a lock. That's right. Crazy stuff. But if you shrunk yourself down into that micron and you were hanging out right next to that anus, there would be a torque in it, a tension in it. Yes, this has been verified lots of times. There would be a tension in it, a torque in it. The neurocircuitry would hold the sphincter in a tonic seizure all the time. You'd have to learn to relax your anus. And it would be almost agonizing, lest you relax it and feel vulnerable. This is what we call the anal retentive personality. Now, let's have a leap of the imagination. What do you think that's going to do to the muscles of the perineum? The 8 or 9, the ischiotuberous, ischiosacral muscles of the perineum. Do you think as they lock, because the anus is locked, because they're all connected together, that it locks the prostate and that locks the sacrum? Haven't you ever spoken to somebody that talks like that? They don't even move their jaw when they talk. Do you know very often that clenching up in the jaw is just the other end of an anus that's doing the same thing? See, if we make it oral, you can understand it. If we make it oral, you can understand this now. You all met people that don't really open their mouth. You see? You know the type. They may be up there lecturing on the ins and outs of how to relax their body. It might be their entire journey just to get their jaw to relax. Guess what? That jaw and the other end, they have a connection. Things are really connected. And that's how people live. Now, if you live that way, if that's you, if that's 25% you and 25% the structural you and 25%, well, you worked as a construction guy and a couple of percentage points for the genes, your epigenetics is going to make sure your genetics expresses the problem. Your epigenetics is going to make sure that your genetics expresses the problem. Your epigenetics is these four variables. And these four variables control the master gene. And that master gene may be by hereditary, by birth. That master gene may be unbelievably resistant to disease. And so you don't get it. But if it's got a slight chink in its armor, those four variables may turn on enough epigenetic negative force to get that gene to express. That is how it works. Take it to the bank. Take it to your doctors. Take it to your scientists, because it's already there. But we're not publishing this. You know why? Because it's going to cause an argument. It's going to turn things upside down. But things are turned upside down. Epigenetics is real. Look it up. It's real. It's just not on the tip of our tongues. This show is 5 or 10 years ahead of itself. That's all this means. Right, yes. If it was 1960, I'd be on the radio saying, don't smoke cigarettes, because it's dangerous. And people would be saying, oh my God, it's dangerous? Why weren't we told? And I'd be saying the same thing. The scientists know it. The researchers know it. It's going to be law soon. You see? That's the way it works. This is what we call the cutting edge. I left one out, didn't I? I didn't talk about the fourth variable, scars. You know why? Because they don't have to. Because you already know all about the scars. Scars are everywhere. Suppose you fell on your butt and you broke your coccyx. That's a scar. That scar will reflex. What do I mean reflex? When you move a body part, break it, or when you cut through a tissue, the fascia, the connective tissue, circumferentially, in three dimensions, twists out from the source of the breakage or the cut. And that twisting of that connective tissue twists other things. And other things that can be twisted are like your prostate gland. So there you have it. The epigenetic functional paradigm. The structure, the psyche, the biochemistry, testosterone converting to dihydrotestosterone because of the abundance of estrogen mimetic chemicals that mutate and force this conversion. Why are those chemicals there? Because the other two variables, the structural and the psychic, don't allow those chemicals to drain out, so they build up. Isn't that simple? Isn't that simple against 250,000 cancers a year? How many radical prostatectomies a year? Impotence, loss of integrity, and worst of all, this situation where you're up peeing all night. If you're up peeing all night because of prostate, and you've tried all the herbs and they don't work, stretch, 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 and stretch. I should have a show where I just chant that for 16 minutes. Just say stretch, 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 and stretch. That's what you got to do. Why? Because your hamstrings, do you know where the anus reflexes to the hamstring? Do you know if the quadriceps and the hamstrings and the adductors are tight, you don't have a sacral pump? Sure you know. I just said that. So if you're one of these people, and there's lots of people out there who are waking up to pee, to urinate, three or four times a night, and there are some white blood cells in your urine. There are white blood cells in your urine. And you're told you've got a low-grade infection. We don't know what it is. We can't find anything when we culture it. But it's there, we know. Because the white blood cells go up in number, and if they do, it means there's some sort of infectious agent there. We know it's not viral. Could be parasitic. Could be bacterial. We don't know. And honestly, you've been here four times. Just take the antibiotic and leave us alone. Cipro. Take Cipro. And hopefully you're not one of those people that has a reaction to Cipro that's not worth taking the drug. I assure you. Look that one up. But if you're one of these people who's up urinating all night and that prostate's enlarged, you have to understand, after you try the myriad of herbs, try all the flower pollen, and try all the isoflavones, try all the sol palmetto, try all the beta-sitosterols, try all the chlorellas, the dulses, the kelps, the Irish mosses, try all the citrus pectins, try all of the good things that either block the conversion, like oat grass, of testosterone to from testosterone to dihydrotestosterone. Try all the good things that bind up the xenoestrogens, like all the sea greens, the kelp and the dulse, etc. Bind up the things that are outside the estrogen issues with things like citrus pectin. Tone up the prostate with flower pollen. Do all these things. They're fantastic. They're important. I'd say about 25-50% of the time when people use herbs so that their BPH doesn't bother them, so that when their chronic prostatitis sets in, you can do something about it with the quick and easy, the herbal approach. God bless you. Do it and get high-quality herbs, and you know where to get them. But then there's the other 50% of you. That's right. You have no idea how this issue has plagued me as a doctor for years. Now I have an opportunity to get you to understand what I'm talking about with this prostate issue. If you've done it chronically, if you have it, and you've tried herbs and you've tried Flomax and you've tried antibiotics, and for whatever the issue, whether it's an enlarged prostate or an infected prostate, stretch your body. So many of you like this are not flexible in your hamstrings, in your adductors, in your quadriceps, in your psoas. You walk like old men. You don't have a flexible sacrum. You're off balance and the gland is dying from atrophy. Do you know one group that has about the highest incidence, not the highest, but amongst the highest incidences of benign prostatic hypertrophy, meaning an enlarged prostate? Catholic priests. Those statistics are available. I don't think it's the highest, but it's amongst the highest. And yes, there is a physiology behind the orgasm that drains the prostate. Orgasms contract the prostate gland. When a man ejaculates, the gland pumps. At least we got that pump working. This is not the sacral pump. If you add the sacral pump to the prostatic contraction, you intensify the orgasm, mind you, by the way. It's one of the reasons, guys, those orgasms in your 20s and 30s and up to your 40s were so much deeper, because it wasn't just the prostate and the nervous system discharging. The sacrum was involved in it, and it intensified the process. So understand that this structural issue controls the chemistry of the gland. And if you add a faulty psychic level to it, as many people, not all, do, the combination then of the psyche, the structure, the chemistry, and the scars will keep you in a chronic state of interference. And then you lose your sleep. And when you lose your sleep, we have the big problem. You lose sexual function. And after a prostatectomy, you may really lose sexual function. Although people are working on solutions to that. I know a guy in Washington that claims he's a urologist. He does the surgeries. He has a different approach. He swears in writing that your sexual function will not be harmed. And we're working all the time. They are working all the time to make sure that we can take the gland out without harming that function. But my biggest concern is sleep. Sleep is a bigger part of your testosterone production as anything. And sleep controls sexual function as much as anything. Only sleep controls many other functions. And this is the issue. You're getting up to urinate a lot because it's prostate gland. So what about prostatic massage? Do you know that 50, 60, 70 years ago, it was commonplace for medical doctors to massage your prostate gland? That's right. You went in with all these infections, and you went in with all this flow issue, and the doctor put the glove on, put his finger in, pressed down on the gland, and this was done, and it was done because it worked. So why aren't we doing this to ourselves? Yeah. It's your body. We teach women breast massage, right? We teach women to feel their breasts. We teach women to massage their breasts. We do. You know why? Because then the breast drains. And that's a whole other issue with breast, similar to prostate. The breast siphons itself off. And so it can't drain through the lymph because the shoulders slouch in as you age, as the neck comes forward. And the breast is sectioned off. So the breast can't drain its toxic poisons. That's what happens to the prostate. That's what happens to these two body parts. Breast for women, prostate for men. As you age, the body parts section off. They become dissociated from the center line of your body. So on top of all the structural shift that should occur to enhance blood flow, drainage, lymphatic flow, and nerve flow to the prostate, on top of all the structural shifts that should occur through flexibility training, is prostatic massage. Do an enema and explore. Wow. your medical doctor just won't buy that one. And yet, his own profession was doing this. Look it up yourself. Don't take my word for anything. Research it yourself. They were doing it to people 50, 60, 70 years ago because it worked. That's why they were doing it. And you can do it. It's not illegal to touch your own body. It's not illegal to go in there and figure it out. Nor is it illegal for your wife, until death do you part, to figure it out with you. And it's not illegal to teach people to do it. I don't, but people do. Look it up. This isn't about sex stuff. You already know that. But I'll say that formally. This is about therapeutic prostatic massage. It's in the books. It was in the standard of care in the American Medical Association 60, 70, 80 years ago. I have very, very, very old men sometimes in my office that talk about this to me, about that guy they knew out there in Yorba Linda somewhere 60 years ago that would stick his finger in and pump that gland, and that would help for 6 months. I've heard stories in my ears from people who remember when medicine had another perspective. How do you do it? You learn. So think about it now. Think about being up all night urinating because your prostate's enlarged and it's crushing that urethra. The prostate, when it enlarges inward. It enlarges inward because its capsule, the prostatic capsule, presses it in as it expands out. And so what happens? That tube down the middle gets crushed. That's why you're starting and you're stopping and you're starting and you're stopping. That's why all of a sudden you have this enormous urge and then you can't go. And that's why you're up all night with the urge to urinate. Buy a Texas catheter. It's called a Texas catheter. It goes over the head of the penis and you pee into a bag. Very, very not the way you'd think. But whatever it takes, gentlemen, to make sure when you go to bed at night, you don't wake up to pee, you should do. Because you can get sick after 3, 4, 5, 10 years of waking up too often. And the big, strong guys, the ones that can take it, that get up on 2 hours of good sleep, and they're the ones that fall. You fall like big trees all of a sudden. So there's something called a Texas catheter. Look that up. Look up prostatic massage. Get back on my shows and listen to the stuff about stretching. And don't worry about your cholesterol either. And don't cut out your gallbladder unless you have to. And don't do a thyroidectomy or cut out half your thyroid. And don't do this and don't do that and don't do the other thing. And use your common sense and go back and look at these shows because they work. And all they do is ask you to consider, under pressure, some things that are just like common sense. And this is a classic example. So, yeah, get your PSA score. Get your Gleason score. Talk to all your oncologists about whether to radiate the gland or cut it out. Whether or not to do Lupron, which kills your testosterone, but ensures you that you won't get an advanced case of prostate cancer into the bone. Stay up to date on allopathic medicine because they come up with great stuff. But when they don't come up with great stuff, you need to present alternatives to them. Some people say they're not even sure prostate cancer is prostate cancer. Wow. That's a perspective in medicine for you. And that's real medicine. And this is real science. And you can ask to show why studies and where the studies are and what the studies are and the rest of it. And that's what we did to cancer with cigarettes in the 60s. We said, where are the studies to support this? Don't you think that you can look ahead of the study? Don't you think that people are smart enough using common sense to start to see things that are ahead of the study? Don't you think that there is what you call an intuitive intellectual faculty that's beyond spending the next 10 to 20 to 30 years in studies? Do we really have to wait until the air is so bad that no one can stand in it before we realize that it produces illness, even though there are no studies to prove this? Why do we have to wait for scientists to sit around a room for 500 years to decide what we already knew in the beginning? You tell me. This is straighttalk.cc, Straight Talk on Health. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. I want you to get on the phones, 310-320-1132. 310-320-1132. And if this show makes sense to you, call Clemelita at that number and come to my school where we can continue this education graphically with pictures. We can build it out. We can get to know each other. You can start to see that there's a consciousness that's beyond just drinking the Kool-Aid. Now, that's the prostate gland. You can apply this to anything. You can apply it to the breast. You can apply it to the thyroid. Anything that gets sick has a solution if you look at its structure, the psyche within it, and the psyches are all different. The physical scars from physical traumas, and then ultimately the chemistry, the specific chemistry. The breast has a lot of fat in it. Because the breast has so much fat in it, fat-soluble chemicals bind into the fat of the breast. And that puts the breast at risk. And you can do the same show with the same principles, with the same insights with the breast. Now, this is medical paradigm. It will be the next medical paradigm come down this century. I kid you not, in science, real science will save us. Right now, you use your common sense. Great show. Nice to talk to you. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Get to the website. Call Clemelita, 310-320-1132. Ciao.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part? You can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.